views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Welcome to Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio. We're having some technical issues. Ladies, do we have you on the line?
Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste, Scotty. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Perfect, perfect. Is there an echo, though, because I'm showing up on the screen?
Oh, no, I don't hear an echo.
No echo? Wonderful. Well, we are here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show. Thank you. Scotty, it is Wednesday, May the 23rd. Namaste to you, Featherlight.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Wonderful. All right. So listen, it is so much going on, Featherlight. So much. I'm so happy that we're here. Yeah, I'm happy that we're here. We were not here with everyone on last Wednesday, so we have quite a bit to catch up on. And we want to let you know that tonight we hope that we continue to raise our frequencies and lift our vibrations and speak our truths as we heal our hearts. Sundown towns and another white male school shooting, Jim Crowism, and more all on the table tonight. You can follow us at the BTR by joining the BTR community. Just go to Black Talk Radio Network and you can join there, and you can follow all of the different groups. We have our Mind, Body, and Spirit group, knowledge groups, conversations about media and films. So take your pick. Just join. That's all we say. Just join. Just join. And you can also follow us on the Twitters at MB Spirit Radio on the Twitters at MB Spirit Radio. Yes. Let me see here. Don't forget to donate. We always want to remind you to donate to the Black Talk Media Network Project so that we can keep these shows coming to you live. I want to open up with a poem, Harlem. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat, or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode? That's one of my favorite Langston Hughes poems. Langston Hughes, Harlem Renaissance writer. And I love that poem so much because it speaks about a dream deferred. And if you were not tuned in a few weeks ago when we spoke about how many dreams have been deferred because of systematic oppression.
Right, right.
And so this is why this particular poem resonates with me in such a way, because how many dreams have been deferred, and what happens to a person when their dream is deferred? So,
yeah. How does it affect the life?
Yes, yeah. How does it affect your life?
And what they feel about themselves.
Exactly. And do you just accept that you have not been able to attain all that you felt or live up to your expectations or your parents' expectations? How does that make you feel, and how do you respond? Harlem, dream deferred, some of the themes are goals, aspirations, dreams like the American dream, African-American issues. And an analysis of the poem is it's a short, pithy poem that seeks to answer its own questions via a series of images using simile and metaphor. So that's one of my favorite poems. I like it too.
Yeah. I think many people, when they sit and think about it, mm-hmm. They can relate to that.
Mm.
They can relate to that. And it usually happens at a very young age. Mm-hmm. You would be surprised at the impact some adults make on children, and they never talk about it, or they may talk about it decades later.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
decades later. Hi, I have a quote. I have a quote. To be creative means to be in love with life. You can be creative only if you love life enough that you want to enhance this beauty. You want to bring a little more music to it, a little more poetry mm. to it, a little more dance mm. to it. Mm. Osho.
Osho.
Yeah, I love reading his quote.
I love his quote. I do
yeah.
too.
So inspirational and thoughtful and enlightening, helpful.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's my quote. Do you have a quote for the light?
Yes. Don't ask why someone... Can you hear me?
Yes. Sure.
Don't ask why someone keeps hurting you. Ask why you keep letting them.
Mm.
Why you keep letting them.
Why do you keep letting
them? I've heard that, and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps doing that. I don't know why she does that, man. But then mm-hmm. ask yourself, why do you keep letting them?
Mm-hmm. And just apropos of that, I heard someone say the other day how, like, people say, well, you know, you make me feel like this or make me feel like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this person said mm-hmm. something that I'm still kind of dealing with and just really meditating on this comment. The person said, it's not how a person makes you feel, it's how you are feeling. You are in control of your feelings. So mm-hmm. when we put it on another person, put the onus on a person as to how they're making us feel, mm-hmm. it's us. Like you just said, mm-hmm. in a sense, almost in the same vein, it's like you're allowing them to affect mm-hmm. you like that, to make you feel like that. Mm-hmm.
Right.
To make you feel whatever way you're feeling. Because we are to be in control of our own feelings. But I've never, I haven't grown to that point where I'm understanding that yes, you really are. So don't let anyone anger you. Don't allow someone to bring your, to snatch your joy. To hold your joy or happiness captive. We're in control of it. So anyway,
let me add a little something to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that instead of saying you make me feel this way,
mm-hmm.
You say when you do this, I feel.
Because okay.
mm-hmm. yes mm-hmm. you do take it off them, but you do want to let them know when you stay out to 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning,
right?
I feel that you're
like you don't care that I'm here by myself at 4 o'clock in the morning,
right? Right, right. So you can't dismiss your feelings, but it's true. How you react to them.
That's right.
Because there is such a thing as good anger. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you do need to get angry, but it's how you react to it. It's how you display it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, you don't put your feelings on someone. But if they're doing something that makes you uncomfortable, then it is your right to let them know, when you do this, I feel mm-hmm. this way. Now, if you want to keep doing this, then that's up to them. And then mm-hmm. it's up to the person to, okay, what do I want to do? Do I want to stay in this and keep feeling this way? Or do I want to exit stage left and feel better?
Just stage left. All right, I know that's right. Okay. I can go with that, certainly. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Makes very good sense. You have anything else before we go into our hot topics?
No, let's go into the hot topics, because we got some.
Oh, goodness gracious. And I tell you, Texas has really been in the news over the past few weeks. But I said this a few years ago, that Texas loves to hide its dirt. It hides its dirt. But I tell you, it is, the light is shining on all of the BS. So let's get ready to go into some hot topics, because Lord knows we have quite a bit. You know, we definitely have to talk about the Santa Fe shooting, but before we go into that, now this was a story last week. This young boy, 13 years of age, Xavion Parker, he was walking home from the bus stop, and let me get ahead to this. So he was walking home from the bus stop. He was abducted by some teenage boys and an adult. I think this was like last Monday. And he was found running away from the suspects, this like cabin that they had somewhere, like an old shed type of house. And this is over here in this area, Wayside. What is that? Wayside and Tidwell. So it's a primarily Black and Latino area. So he was found running down the street with torn clothes and no shoes. And one of the neighbors, thank goodness, saw him running down the street, just like on Get Out, like on that movie Get Out. And so thankfully she ran into him. And let's see, the little boy's mother's name is Michelle Lee. She called police when her son never returned home. And let's see here. So the witness's name was Kamisha Kermuch, and I heard she had a some type of gathering or barbecue over to her home, or let's see, yeah, over to her home this weekend, and I think that she wants to try to get involved with some activism. So I'm going to contact her. I know exactly where the area is. I go through that area. So Kamisha Kermuch immediately called the police. So I don't even need to read through this story. Let me just break this down, what happened. So this little boy was abducted, kidnapped by these people, and they planned on killing him, torturing him. They did assault him. One of the men had, now in the news report, it states that one of the men had "I Hate Black People" on his tattooed on his arm. But what some reports have stated, that the tattoo read, I hate all niggers. Okay, this is what the little boy said. Supposedly. Now, they told the little boy they were going to kill him, and they sent these texts to his mother saying that they were going to kill him, they were going to lynch him, she's going to find him tomorrow lynched. And if you've been keeping up with the news, there have been some reports of at least 3 to 4 lynchings over the past 10 days.
Oof.
Wow. And so it's like we're living in 1892, but this has never stopped. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. So they said that she would find him hanging tomorrow. Now, what really bothers me about this is when you Google this article, any article, the article reads alleged abduction. So what you saying?
Whoa!
You don't believe what he said? So he fabricated this? He fabricated that he was kidnapped and assaulted, and they told him they were going to lynch him, and then they sent these texts to his mother. He was running down the street like he was on the Get Out movie. No phone, no book bag, no shoes. So, well, what happened? That area, from what I'm told, used to be a heavy Klan area.
Mm.
Heavy KKK area. Mm-hmm. Just like the Santa Fe area where the school shooting took place last Friday. So go to your social media sites to try to follow this story. I would love to hear some dialogue around this. What do you think? Should there be some actions taken? Do we need to go to the police chief here in Houston? I mean, what do people want to do? If you have any ideas, because it's just so much going on, and they're doing this to discombobulate us and to wear us down. But we have to stay.
With fear tactics.
Yes, we have to stay diligent.
And when you take for the children, something really needs to be done. I mean, your child cannot walk down the street without being snatched.
Like I said, when 1892, where these people just ride down the street and capture you. And then lynch you. So Xavion Parker is his name. There's a hashtag for Xavion Parker. So I just wanted to make sure that we keep that story circulating, because it seems as if the Santa Fe shooting has dominated people. Right.
Yes.
So people are trying to like push this story under the rug.
This is a major thing. Kidnapping?
Yes.
Kidnapping? Are you serious? You don't how you allege a kidnapping?
Allege. So you're calling this little boy a liar. He's just fabricating this. He just dreamt it all. So Malcolm X's birthday was May 19th. And I think he would have been 93 years of age and wisdom. Malcolm X, El-Haj Malik Baz. I'll read a quick quote. America preaches integration and practices segregation. That's a quote by Malcolm X.
Let me read a quick one.
Okay.
If you stick a knife 9 inches into my back and pull it out 3 inches, that is not progress.
Not progress.
Even if you pull it out all the way, that is not progress. Progress is healing the wound, and America hasn't even begun to pull out the knife.
Woo! No, that's right.
Hasn't even begun.
So thanks for sharing that, Featherlight. And I can always love and appreciate a Malcolm X quote. So Stacey Abrams is the first African American to win a majority party's nomination for governor in Georgia. She won it last night, so she just may become the first African American governor since Reconstruction if she wins the election. So she's going up against this one guy. I think his name is Kelsey, this one candidate. And he has this crazy bus commercial. He's like on the bus and has this bus sound effect and all of this. Like, this is a deportation bus, and we're going to deport all these illegals and so on. So I'm like, Lord have mercy. Where did he get these people from?
That's the pick of the crop.
Right. And then here in the Houston area, Lupe Valdez became the first openly gay and Latino woman to win the Democratic nomination for governor. I think I'll vote for her over some of these other people. So let's talk about this Santa Fe school shooting. Let me get to this Santa Fe school shooting, because these people are out of control. You need to check your children. Parents, don't let your children just stay in the room with the door closed and you don't know that they're making bombs and collecting all kinds of weapons in their room.
Weapons.
And then they go and terrorize everybody. So last Friday, 17-year-old Demetrius Pagortis killed 10 people, wounded 13 at Santa Fe High School on Friday. I've been to that school a few times. He went into the art class with a sawed-off shotgun and a .38 caliber. And so some of the reports said when he went into the art room and started shooting, he was saying, "Woo-hoo!" And some reports say that he aimed to kill this one particular girl who rejected his advances. So he liked this little girl, and supposedly she stood up in the classroom and embarrassed him the week before, and so he came back to kill. And the reports state that he spared the lives of those that he liked so that they could tell his story. Otherwise, the other victims were taunted by him during his rampage, and he was singing as he shot and killed them, "Another One Bites the Dust." And then he yelled, "Surprise, MF," before pelting a closet door with student behind, hiding in this closet.
Whoa.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Whoa. So now, his father, and they had this killer 2 miles up the street from where we are here in the Galveston County Jail. I said, "Lord have mercy." So the father says his son's a good boy, and he believes that bullying drove him to perpetrate last week's deadly rampage. And let's just talk about his father for a second. So his father actually has a record. His father was twice charged with misdemeanor assault in 1987 and 2012, and both cases were dismissed. In 2008, he was convicted of illegally dumping wood materials. Okay. So the boy had a sawed-off shotgun, .38 caliber handgun, and Governor Greg Abbott said that the teen obtained the guns from his father. The killer obtained the guns from his father. Now, law enforcement officials said they're still trying to determine if that was the case at that time. So wait a minute. How is the governor saying that he obtained the guns from his father, but then law enforcement is saying they're still trying to figure it out? Which is it?
Right.
And then, yeah, and then this article says investigators have identified the original buyers, but how Demetrius ultimately obtained the weapons is still under investigation. How is it still under investigation? Who are the original buyers? Is it his father? So did he get them from home? Did he steal them from someone's house? What do you mean investigators have identified the original buyers? Was it Demetrius' parents? Uncle? I mean, what? Who? What? How did he gain access to the guns? Okay. So now the father gave an interview with Greece's Antenna TV, and he said he owned the guns used in the attack. So, but why are law officials saying they're still trying to determine that? What is going on here? Something doesn't sound right to me. And listen to this part. The suspect and the officers exchanged gunfire, but they did not exchange gunfire during the 25-minute negotiation, which ended in his surrender. You mean to tell me this boy killed 10 people? You know he went into school killing people, and you negotiated with him for 25 minutes?
25 minutes.
But you didn't give Tahrir Rice 3 seconds to put his gun down. You jumped out the car, one leg still in the car. You shot Tamir Rice.
Pow, pow, pow. Immediately.
2 seconds. The driver didn't even immediately have time to put the car in park. This fool jumped out the car, one leg still in the car, shooting a 12-year-old boy. This outside at a park playing. But you negotiated 25 minutes with this killer. Okay?
25 minutes. To someone who's taken the lives of 10 people, children.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was eight children and two adults. Now Santa Fe, again, is known as a Klan's town. I asked around.
It is.
Santa Fe, which is 20 miles from Galveston. I pass by it every day, coming in and out of from Galveston, going into Houston. Known as a Klan town. Okay. Now, here's the deal. Initially, the reports were reading that, oh, he was bullied. Oh, he was a loner. Blah, blah, blah. Sad, sad, sad. But then I said, wait a minute. Well, how was he a loner and bullied and all of this? And he was on the football team and the dance squad. Seemed like he was some kind of way involved in church or something.
So but, team, keyword, team.
Yes. Don't you ever leave?
How you going to be a loner?
Right. And then if you go back and look at the articles again, that's one thing Baba Dick Gregory used to always say. As soon as something like this happens, you read several articles, read different reports, because then you'll be able to detect the lies and the foolishness and the cover-up. Because how was he a loner? How was this boy a loner? Again, he's on the football team, he's on the dance squad, and then he decided not to kill the ones that he liked. So you had friends. So you were not this loner just getting bullied and so troubled. You a killer. These people are killers, and I'm tired of them I'm tired of lamestream media trying to present these killers as someone with some troubles. Well, if that's the case, we can say that many of our children are troubled because of poverty, racism. Wait a minute, let me get to this really quick. And we can come back to this Santa Fe if you have some commentary, Featherlight. Speaking of what our children are experiencing, another news story in the Houston area, right outside of Houston, Katy, Texas, all of the black children at this middle school received a text at 12 p.m., a racist, threatening text. Every single black middle school child, we're not talking about high school, middle school, received a racist, threatening text, and the parents are furious, wondering how was it that someone was able to hack into a system and obtain the numbers of every single black child and send them a threatening, racialized text.
Man, that's
so
serious.
We don't see our children, that's very serious. We don't see our children coming back to school, shooting up the place from all the discrimination. We can't wear our hair the way we want to wear our hair. You call us stupid, even though we went in 80 scholarships, 114 scholarships. Read about this one girl won 100 and was accepted to 114 schools. Yes, 114 schools. So, this Santa Fe killer, no, he was not a loner. This was another typical white male teen shooting, or a white male shooting, killing. That's what it is. Domestic terrorism. And I just wanted to share that, Featherlight, because I'm just not going for this, and many people are not going for this whole presentation of this loner and he's been bullied and he's been
and feel sorry for him and he's troubled.
No.
And we can see how that went in that direction.
I'm troubled. So
Well, let me give you a little history on Santa Fe.
Please.
On February 14th, 1981, and people, please pay attention to these dates, these so-called holidays. They all have, like, gruesome backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Anyway, on February 14th, 1981, the KKK hosted a fish fry. This is in Santa Fe. Protesting Vietnamese shrimpers in the Gulf. They didn't want them in there. And so this, along with other incidents quoted, no telling what was going on, in neighboring towns, led to a Supreme Court case with the Vietnamese Fishermen's Association versus the Knights of the KKK. And this also served as a basis for a film called Alamo Bay with Ed Harris. Now, Black Americans in Santa Fe are very few. It's like less than 3%, and that's including African, Caribbean, Black Americans, just anybody that considers themselves as Black. There have been a couple of police officers who were transferred there, one from New Jersey, one from New York, who cannot believe how racist the town is. One guy says it is the most racist place he's ever been. He's a transfer from New Jersey. And he says he gets the most disrespect when he's wearing his gun and badge, because the people there just do not like the fact that a Black man with a badge or a uniform is telling them what to do. The other cop from New York says that he gets the most racist remarks when he's doing his job, like when he was on a call with two other officers. One man just walking by called him Shadow Man. I've never heard that one. But he said, Oh, Shadow Man, don't stay in the dark. Don't stay in the sun too long, Shadow Man. You're going to get blacker. And he says, what is he to do? You run after him, make him scared, you know. He said that this is just the strangest thing to see so much racism in this little town. So this is, it's a KKK town, and the people here in Galveston, they don't think twice about it. They said, it's KKK. So that is the type of small town. And they're also the type of town where they wanted to separate themselves from the town that's close by. They annexed themselves off. So
Because Santa Fe is, it's only like a few streets. It's really like a little small place, a small town. And it's on one side of Highway 45, and then there's Hitchcock. Hitchcock, that sounds like some old lynching.
Yes, it does.
So, yes, you have Hitchcock on the other side of the highway. The history of Santa Fe. Doesn't seem like much has changed. Thanks for sharing that, Featherlight. But, my thing is, with this whole Santa Fe shooting also, Featherlight, is it's almost like when Malcolm said the chickens are coming home to roost.
True.
Because it's like all of this hatred, all of this violence perpetrated against us, is coming back. Mm-hmm. It's coming back to your children. They're violent.
Yes, it is.
And that's
yes,
a very violent act.
Yeah.
And they need to get these children some help. They need some mental evaluations, along with some of these people impersonating cops.
Oh, my gosh.
These people are out of control completely.
Walking around with the badge and the gun.
Speaking of cops, we're going to keep it right here in Texas, because this is another video that went viral. Texas has, oh my God, just been dominating the news. So Houston, I'm going to have to come up with a name for these cops that are acting like gang members, or these people impersonating cops. But there was another cop gang traffic terror assault. This soldier pulled these people over in a I think they were like in a black small SUV or something. Not sure what part of Houston, but the cops were like behind them, behind the car, speaking through the bullhorn. Like, I mean, these people, they act like they've been chasing them for two cities, and they have a couple of pounds of meth and a couple of pounds of marijuana and some cocaine, and they just came from Mexico. And I mean, mm-hmm. it's like, damn, I mean, the way they're acting like you just robbed
and they surrounded them.
Yeah, surround them. Get out of the car. Driver, come out of the car. Driver, put your hands up and step back. Passenger, on the right side. Oh, this all off the wall, crazy, insane. It's like, what did they do? Well, I mean, did they rob a bank? They didn't look like they had just robbed a bank or anything, or, you know, have a dead body in the back and the trunk. Or, I mean, you know, I'm still wondering what happened. So one young lady is filming this whole interaction with the cop, and you can just see that this is it's devastating to her to have to watch this, because she's saying, as she's filming, she's like, oh please, just, you know, oh don't do that, oh don't move, because it looks like the driver is trying to reach back in the car. And so the woman that's filming, she says, don't do that, oh please don't do that, oh my God, oh my nerves so bad, oh my nerves so bad. And so just listening to her, I'm thinking about the stress she's going through, the emotions going through her, just trying to film this for the record. And she's hoping she doesn't film someone being killed like so many people have experienced over the past years. So one of the police officers, I'm not calling them police officers, one of these slave catchers says to the woman that's exiting the driver's rear side, he says to her, I think she was exiting the driver's rear side, but anyway, she's exiting the back seat, and the cop says to her, put your hands up like I'm going to shoot you.
Pretend we're going to shoot you. Yes. Mm-hmm. What a horrible feeling.
I can see why people, you know, jump and jitter and all of this business when interacting with these cops, because all of that yelling and hollering and pretend like I'm going to shoot you, I might faint, fall out, anything. Put my hand up to my head. They'll swear I had a gun. Just anything.
You moved quickly.
You moved. You didn't have anything in your hand, but you moved that hand.
You started falling on the ground, so I thought you were going to get on the ground and then grab something and then aim it at me, so I got you first.
Yeah, because you're going to do like Trayvon Martin and use the sidewalk as a weapon. That's the weapon, the sidewalk.
Oh, my
goodness. And then this slave catcher moved her car, and it was undetermined if he was actually moving it just to move it out of traffic, because it didn't seem like he moved it out of traffic. It seems like he drove up and then just reversed and came right back to the same place. So what were you doing? Were you trying to plant some drugs? What's the deal? What is that all about? So I definitely want to make certain that there's an investigation. I hope that they have those slave catchers' names, their badge numbers. And first I would like to know, why were they pulled over? That's first. Right. What was the deal?
Yeah.
What was it all about?
Yeah.
And is that protocol for a cop to get in the car and drive a person's car? This is a suspect. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Aren't you supposed to call for a tow trucking company?
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why are your hands on their wheel?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm just going to run through these other stories very, very quickly so we can get to our opioid factor and out doing the damn thing. People may have seen the viral video of the ladies that were in Houston's restaurant in Atlanta. One of them, or two of them, are actresses, and one of the actresses, she appears on Greenleaf. She's Pastor Skanky's wife. I think that's his name, Skanky. Pastor Skanky.
Skank.
Oh, look, I want to call him Skanky. Pastor Skank's wife. And so she and two of her friends went to Houston's. The kitchen was closed. They were informed that the kitchen was closed. But they said, the women said, that they were still told that they could come into the restaurant just as long as they knew that the kitchen was closed. So I don't know if they were just going to go to the bar or whatever. But they went to the restroom. They were in the restroom allegedly like 10 minutes. And so the manager asked the security guard, who was an off-duty cop, to go in the restroom and retrieve them and escort them out. He goes into the restroom, pulling the women out, telling them they have to leave. And they were just treated horribly. And this was a black security guard, if I'm not mistaken. From what the video was quite dark. But I think it was a black security guard. So some people are saying, well, they should have left. And if they were told that they couldn't be in there, whatever. My thing is, it's no reason to treat those ladies like that. You do not have to drag on them.
That's
you do not have to pull them.
That is the point.
It was very reminiscent of watching those civil rights movies when the white men were attacking black women in the streets and their dresses were raised and you could see their underwear was exposed. Just like the young lady in the Waffle House. And so all of these different attacks on people, and we're constantly seeing this every single day, is very damaging to our psyche. But we're going to have to stay strong and press forward, because we're at war.
We are definitely at
war.
We have been at war for some time, but it has shot to a different level, a different height.
And it's a spiritual war. So, but see, and I have another thought about this too. I thought we were supposed to be boycotting Houston, so after what happened to
Jay on
Morrison
the list.
I thought Waffle House and Houston were places we were not going to patronize.
Yeah, we have to stick to the plan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they're on the list, then don't feel like you can just saunter in there. It's a mission.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
We have an immense amount of buying power. We really, really do. I mean, the numbers are phenomenal. And the trees, 1.2 trillion in 2016. 1.3 in 2017, and expected to rise to 1.5 by 2021. And according to the Nielsen reports, in some cases, the black spending power it represents more than 50% of the overall spending in certain categories, and that's power.
Yes.
Power that we can use.
Go where you are. What is it?
Appreciated, not tolerated.
Mm-hmm.
Not tolerated.
Right. So you don't want me in here, then fine. I will not be back. But again, like I said, Houston and Waffle House, I thought they were on the list anyway. So ladies, I'm so sorry that happened to you, and I hope that you sue. I know some people say we can't litigate our way out of racism, but I'm not even going to say but. My thing is, if I can sue, then I'm going to sue. Like they want to tie us up in court, let me tie you up in court too.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. There are many tactics. Mm-hmm. Just like there are many tactics being used.
Even if you don't sue, just follow the darn, stay on code. Just stay on code.
Right.
We're not supposed to be there anyway. T.I. was arrested. T.I. was arrested. Security guard wouldn't let him in his own property. My whole deal with that is, if that's T.I.'s house that he was trying to get in that they were using on that show, listen, those are multi-million dollar homes over there. You in Atlanta and you don't know who T.I. is? And so the whole report was about T.I. being belligerent with the security guard once he was actually given access to enter his own property or enter the gated property. But so what? So what? How many wealthy, wealthy, wealthy white men have been able to speed down the street and not get a ticket, commit crimes, and get away with it? Rest
talk
his soul, Ted Kennedy. Okay. Ted Kennedy and the whole Chappaquiddick, okay.
Rest
his soul. But how many people have been able to, how many wealthy white men have had their crimes swept under the rug? We can go to this little recent case with this white boy that raped that girl behind that dumpster at the college. And his father said that he shouldn't go to jail and destroy his swimming career. He wouldn't be able to pursue his career. He'd be a sex offender and shouldn't go to jail. And the judge agreed because the judge was on the same swimming team when he was at that college. So
don't forget, for 20 minutes of action.
Don't punish my son for raping that girl for 20 minutes. Don't destroy my son's life. So that's what I'm saying. Yeah, T.I. maybe should have gone on in the house. Okay, you were, you know, maybe intoxicated. But I've seen plenty of intoxicated people get away with all kinds of things, especially if they have the right complexion for the connection, as they say. So
I
hope people realize that we're living in these black codes and Jim Crow laws, and we're going to talk more about that tonight. Anything else you want to share, Feather Light, before I go into the opioid factoid?
No, please enlighten us on the opioid.
Opioid factoid. Yes, yes. And by the way, people know the NFL owners-approved team-by-team national anthem policy will allow players to remain in locker rooms. So if you don't want to stand for the national anthem, you can just stay in the locker room. I say just stay off the field a couple of Sundays, let them lose some money.
Hit them in the pockets.
Yep. Miss a few games. They have a union, don't they? Okay, yeah. Opioid factoid. Alright, here we go. We need some music for this opioid factoid too. I don't know what kind of music. Some kind of drugged out music. Okay, so drugs have ensnared the middle class suburbanites. I was watching this video. There was this one dealer. He wasn't black, since people want to promote giving drug dealers life sentences. You're going to be locking up quite a few other people than black people, okay? Quite a few people other than black people. So this dealer said he was earning $80,000 a week selling his pills and heroin. He said, in fact, he even had a lawyer as a client, one of his drug clients, who came to buy some drugs from him while he was on the way to defend a client facing drug charges.
What?
So he went to go get high before he went to court to defend his client on some drug charges.
For the same thing.
Oh,
that's a messed up mess.
That's just how bad this opioid epidemic is. This opioid addiction. At last count, 909 people had died of drug overdoses in West Virginia in 2017. 909 people.
909.
In 2017. According to data released by the State Health Statistics Center.
Amazing.
Okay, That's up from 887 fatal overdoses in 2016.
That's just in West Virginia.
That's just West Virginia. That's just West Virginia. Okay. Mm. And also in West Virginia, there was some bad heroin. They call it BTH, black tar heroin, BTH. So there was some bad heroin that was mixed with some fentanyl, and 26 people OD'd in 4 hours. First responders had to use more Narcan than normal to revive the addicts. Sometimes they maybe can revive a person with one shot of the Narcan. Sometimes it may take them using like two or three cans to revive them. And see, that's why people like
that stuff is expensive too.
It's expensive. It's expensive. And that's why that sheriff was saying that these people are causing a burden on society, because not only are the first responders having to constantly bring people back to life again, but you're draining the economy of cities and states and counties rather, by constantly having to replenish this Narcan because they OD in so much, two and three times a day.
Same people.
The same people. The same people. So the addicts want non-addicts to see that their addiction is a disease. I'm still battling with that.
Me too.
Okay, I'm not ready to accept this as a disease, because no one called crack addiction a disease. So now you have all this newfound research that now it's a disease. No, I still don't want my tax dollars going in an Narcan. No, let my tax dollars, I'd rather see my tax dollars go to some books and education, better schools, safety, food for people, housing. Not some Narcan. Two or three times a day.
Addicts.
And you know what? There should be
a law. And they're going to turn around and do the same thing.
The same thing. There should be a law passed. A city council should pass something, whereas if you OD twice, if they've had to come to your house twice, they can't use Narcan on you again.
Yeah.
That's what needs to happen.
Because right now it's limitless.
Yeah. They know that they can get high, overdose, and then somebody's going to come and revive them. And then they just sit up there and they go right back and pack up in their little pack of BTH and do it all over again as soon as they will. Because they say that they feel so sick. This is what they say. They feel so sick. And I believe them. They probably do feel sick, because you're putting that stuff in your system. They feel so sick they have to take the heroin again. They have to have another dose because they feel so sick. And you probably do. They say they feel like they have the worst flu in the world. Well, you're putting that poison in your system, I guess so.
Yeah.
But I still don't want my tax dollars going to you. I just don't.
Sorry.
I don't want my tax dollars going to you. I just don't. I don't. Now, if the Narcan is provided by some nonprofit organization, there are some counties where that is happening, fine. People that want to donate their millions and millions of dollars, great. But I do not want my tax dollars going to that. So, doing the damn thing. Doing the damn thing. 24-year-old. Oh, and that's the end of the opioid factor for tonight, Feather Light.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Keep us posted.
Mm-hmm.
On these wild addicts trying to get all of our money.
I will do that. Yeah. I mean, I hope that they get help. I do feel a little sorry for them, because you get yourself trapped up in the drug life. But at the same time, no one cared after crack was deposited into our neighborhoods and our people were caught up in this whole insidious system of drugs being dumped into our communities.
Pumped into the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. And you destroy families, you destroy communities.
Destroy families, mothers.
Created more crime than we've ever seen in our lives. Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
no. Black babies.
Mm-hmm. And this is what we're dealing with now, all of these children with no soul, don't care about anybody. They don't care about themselves. They disrespect everybody. This is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with the residual effects of the crack epidemic.
Exactly.
These children didn't have anybody
raising them. We're still being affected.
That's right. They didn't have anybody raising them, and then they raised this group of young children that we're seeing right now that don't have any respect for anybody or anything. Some of them, not all of them, don't even know how to speak to somebody. Want to fight and kill.
Yeah.
You want to video a girl getting beat down versus
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
Video.
That
this
is
girl,
so weird
this
to me.
Man, this one little girl, this one little girl fought like seven people by herself.
Mm.
And the boy is sitting up filming. I would, if I saw my child on that video filming, I would beat his tail and I would tell him, see, we knew better. We didn't do that stuff. Well, we didn't have the phones. But even if we had the phones back then, I know that our generation, 70s babies.
Oh, no. No, no.
Somebody, all we need is one or two people to film, get two angles, and the rest of us jumping in.
Right.
That's it. So, parents that are listening.
Apathy.
Parents that are listening, please tell your children, if they see it, someone getting beat up, I don't care if it is the police. We need to grow some balls like the Palestinians. And I'm not trying to promote violence. I'm just saying, Eric Garner should not have been choked and killed on the street like that.
Good evening, ladies.
Yes.
Hi, Scotty. I saw a local news story here in Charlotte. I don't live in Charlotte, but, you know, we get the news out of Charlotte. And there was a 19-year-old woman who was getting beat up and carjacked by a 14-year-old, a 15-year-old. I think it was two 15-year-olds. So these are teenagers that's beating up this 19-year-old. I mean, they was beating her bad. And this woman and her husband saw it because they said they had noticed the three girls and, you know, just noticed that they were acting suspicious and that they must have been up to something. So they look out the window again and they beaten up this woman and they ran out, the woman and her husband, you know, to rescue the woman. And they finally did apprehend two of them, but one of them was on the loose. And I'm like, man, what has gotten into these teens? Because these teens were like, this one neighbor had caught them on their surveillance camera pretending to be the police, talking about Charlotte Mecklenburg police, please open up. So I'm like, I don't know, you know, what was wrong with these three girls, but they was looking for some trouble. And they going to find some trouble once they get them slave catchers get a hold of them and they get put in the system.
I know that's right. They sure will.
Sure will.
So the people saw the girls looking suspicious and they saw them jumping on the one girl and they came out and helped her?
Yes.
Well, I'm glad they had sense enough to come out and help her and not just stand there and watch her get beat down.
Me too. Me too. That's still some compassion.
Yeah. So like I said, parents, tell your children, look, organize that stuff. Organize it ahead of time. You and you will film. We will help. It doesn't take everybody filming, okay? All we need is one person to film. Everybody else jump in and help. I don't ever want to see a video like that again. Especially with some girl fighting and some punk ass boy just standing around, woo, filming. They let that little girl fight by herself. And the people, they were taunting this girl. They were taunting her. And that girl put her hoodie up on her head. Baby, she went to swinging like Muhammad Ali. She should be. That girl was swinging. And see, another thing, too, make sure. Oh, sure.
Basically, I've been listening into what you ladies have been talking about and what Bubba, I believe I know who that is, that was just speaking about. And, you know, a large part of it, right, is the fact that one of you ladies mentioned, you know, like us being 70s babies. You know, I'm a mid-60s baby, but, you know, we're still in the same age group, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, and this is just for me, and I'm speaking from a recent personal experience, which is why I chose to chime in, you know, today's parents are not parents. You know, they weren't raised like we were raised. You know, our parents didn't, you know, allow certain things. There just were certain things that weren't going to happen. Now, I'm from New York. And, you know, when I grew up in a building, not the projects, but a big apartment building, every parent had the right to whip your child's behind when you did something wrong before you got home and you got the real whooping. But none of that takes place anymore. And, you know,
you can't even raise your voice.
Yeah, well, no, actually you can, depending on where you live. But, I mean, the main thing is this, right? When you start letting your child, because this is something I'm dealing with personally right now, when you start letting your child disrespect you, curse you out, I mean, literally curse you out, you know, letting your child smoke weed in your house, you know, smoke around a baby and everything else, you have no control over your house. And, at you know, at some point, you should have stopped that as a parent to begin with.
Right.
And, you know, when it moves on to where, like, you know, now your child is 30 years old, and they feel that they can speak to you however they want to speak to you and this, that, and the other, and I'm not their father. I know his father, but, you know, I'm not his father. And when your child is sitting there cursing you out because he can't get in contact with you because, one, he's so disrespectful. No, he's not allowed in my house. Although you live with me, he's not allowed to call my house phone. Right? It is my cell phone, but it's your phone to use, and then your phone is broken, and we're waiting for a replacement to come in, and he's cursing you out and everything else. But they're talking about, yo, when I see this nigga, I'm going to shoot him.
Oh, my.
Referring to me.
Wow.
But the worst part about it is you're endorsing your child's screwed up behavior by trying to make excuses for him. I do understand, yes, you were upset because you couldn't get in contact with your mommy. Right? But in the same breath, at 30 years old, you should be getting an allowance, number one. Number two, you should be able to hold on to a job for more than 30 days, but then not come crying to your mother every time that you broke when you're not trying to do anything with yourself, right? Because that's her kid. I got 5 children myself, all my kids, college, period. That's the things that I've instilled in them. So if you chose to raise your child a certain way, that's on you. And if you allow your child to respect you and cursing you out, you know, what the F, you were supposed to have been here, what's going on with this S and nonsense and blah blah blah,
oh my God,
that's on you. But when you expect me to accept it, that's one completely different. But more importantly, when you put a life threatening statement out there against me, I'm a real dude. You know, and I come from the streets, and I've also come from prison, and I'm just not going to take that ish lightly. I'm just not. I don't care if it's your son or not.
Wow. Well, so I totally would agree with you on that. I certainly would not accept that, because I feel like, just like you said, sir, that's your child. If you want to accept that, that's you. But I don't have to.
Exactly.
I'm not accepting that. I respect myself. You may not respect yourself. You may not have earned that respect from your child, apparently, since they're speaking to you like that. But I don't have to accept that.
So I just wanted to chime in, but I'm going to mute myself again, and I'm just going to listen in.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing. We appreciate that. And we'll
thank
take
you
a
so
break
much for your work, sisters.
Yes, okay. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I know quite a few people are or have experienced
a situation like that, when you're involved with someone and they have these unruly, belligerent, disrespectful, challenged children, and then they want you to sit here and deal with all of that madness because they've been dealing with it all of their lives.
All their lives.
No. And you need to get that little demon seed and do something with them, because we're tired of it. We're tired of having to deal with these people that didn't raise their children, and then we have to sit here and go somewhere to our place of business or pleasure, and then you have to worry about this demon seed coming in, shooting up the place, or talking crazy to everybody. Get your children some help. Take them to some type of social service place. Have a lot of
free
places.
Let's take a break.
Let's take a break, and we will be right back. You're tuned into the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show. We'll come back with our Doing the Damn Thing and more. We're back here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show. Don't forget to go onto the Black Talk Radio Network page and donate, donate, donate. Just log onto the page, scroll all the way down to the bottom, and you can donate. Support this media project. Okay, Scotty has such an awesome platform he wants to create. More media centers, and we need to help bring that into fruition. All right, doing the damn thing. Doing the damn thing tonight. We are honoring 24-year-old Tommy Tommy Adeyemi. She has one of the biggest book deals in history for her epic Nigerian fantasy series. She netted a seven-figure movie deal. She says that this book, entitled The Children of Blood and Bone, it's an epic fantasy very similar to The Black Panther, but with magic. So she says if you like The Black Panther movie, you will love her book. So she is our Doing the Damn Thing person of the evening. Congratulations to you. All right, I want to put out a call to action quickly before we go into another topic. Tweet, email, or call your legislators or representatives. Ask them to bring to the floor an anti-lynching bill. Pass the anti-lynching bill. We can hashtag it. Hashtag pass anti-lynching bill. Contact them. You can use the Five Calls app. Or you can just call the White House switchboard, ask for your representative. You can also Google who represents me. You type in your address. You'll find out your representatives if you're unfamiliar with them. And contact them. You can tweet them. I think tweeting is great because other people see it, and they do not want to be shamed not having numerous people email them or tweet them about something and they're not responding, especially, like I said, if you tweet them. People will see that, and it creates that conversation where they have to eventually respond. But I say we can call, we can email, you can do snail mail, you can tweet them, go on their pages, Instagram pages, go to their office, whatever it is, but they need to pass an anti-lynching bill. There is not an anti-lynching bill, and we need one. You come up with all other kind of bills, why not an anti-lynching bill? All right, and also you can call your legislators about people wasting our tax dollars, calling the police on us while we're outside barbecuing or in our backyards or sitting in Starbucks. Stop wasting my tax. Again, you're wasting my taxpayers, got my tax dollars with this nonsense. Stop it. So that's the approach that I'm taking, and I hope that you will join me in that. If not, find some kind of cause. We have to hold these people accountable. So that's what I wanted to share, Featherlight. You want to go into, how about we go into Sundown Town? Sundown Town, Featherlight. Feather? Can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Did you know? One of the most appalling and widespread practices of the quote unquote elephant in the living room and the most ignored is sundown towns. Sundown towns are towns in the U.S. which do not allow blacks on the street after sundown or something horrible, despicable will happen to them and nothing will be done. Sundown towns are almost everywhere, including up north, which boasts on being more liberal. Beginning around 1890 into around 1968, white Americans established thousands of towns across the U.S. for whites only. The blacks were driven out, then sundown towns were posted. Some towns passed ordinances barring African Americans after dark or prohibiting the ones still there from owning or renting property, harassing or killing those who violated the rule. Some sundown towns similarly kept out Jews, Chinese, Mexicans, and Native Americans, or other groups as well. Now, sundown towns are not limited to the traditional South. Although the term sundown towns was avoided, they didn't want to call themselves sundown towns, but they followed the same basic policy. Okay. For instance, Greenbelt, Maryland, Green Hills, Ohio, and Greendale, Wisconsin, known as the Greens, were planned towns built by none other than Franklin D. Roosevelt administration. And they were built as sundown towns. So don't be so surprised about the actions of our current president. This is nothing new. Past presidents have been very open about how they felt about blacks in this country. Warren County in Pennsylvania, DeLand, Illinois, Appleton, Wisconsin, Levittown on Long Island, Livonia, Michigan, all of these are sundown towns. White County, Indiana, Marlow, Oklahoma, and Parma, Ohio are just a few of sundown towns. Now, there's reason to believe that more than half of all towns in Oregon, no surprise there, Indiana, Ohio, the Cumberland, the Ozarks, and in the Ozarks they call them the gray towns, they were white on purpose. Okay? You notice the small number of blacks there, that's for a reason. Sundown suburbs were equally plentiful and concentrated around major cities. And they're found from Darien, Connecticut to La Jolla, California. Okay, California is not exempt. In fact, most suburbs begin their life as sundown towns. Notice how mostly it's just whites. Many towns clearly and explicitly define themselves as sundown towns, but allow one black household as an exception. I always wonder what it would feel like to be the only black household in a sundown town. Wallace County in Idaho put up a sign in the 20th century that read, quote, "Nigger, read this sign and run." Another sign read, "Nigger, if you can't read, run anyway." In 1910, in the elite suburb of Wilmette, Chicago, a committee of residents asked all families unable to house their maids and gardeners to fire them, claiming that depressed real estate values was a result of having too many blacks. So by 1970, Wilmette's 32,134 residents included just 81 African Americans, and most of them were their live-in maids.
Oh, wow.
So do some downtown still exist? Knowing this, you can't help but wonder about towns and suburban areas now, like San Diego, Santa Fe, mm-hmm. which are 95 and then 97% white. So how did they get to be that way? In the 2000 census in both Wallace County in Idaho and Calhoun County in Illinois, for example, there were no African Americans recorded, and just one Asian American in Wallace. There are 194 confirmed sundown towns in Illinois alone.
Oh my goodness, 194?
194 confirmed. These are confirmed. Okay. And you know they can only be confirmed by a white person who's going around doing all this record keeping. Anna, Illinois. If you're concerned about, you know, if you're wondering, as you travel, are there still sundown towns? Yes. Anna, Illinois is a town of about 7,000 people, including the adjoining town, Jonesboro. 35 miles from Cairo in southern Illinois. So in 1909, after a horrific lynching spectacle, and when they say spectacle, they mean like hundreds of people came around to you know, with the picnic and whatever to watch. All African Americans were expelled from the Twin Cities after this lynching. So there are many Rosewoods wasn't alone. So it's common knowledge that African Americans are currently still not allowed to live in Anna, except for residents of the state mental hospital and Transit Edis II Motel. Can you imagine just going through Anna, Illinois, and not knowing this history, and then saying, "Yeah, you know, I need a room for the night," and then you getting this stare? Okay, so check this out. Following is a conversation between the author of this book, where I'm getting all this information from. It's called Sundown Towns. The author's name is James W. Lorne, and he says until he wrote this book, nobody had any information on sundown towns. It was like a well-kept secret. Mm-hmm. So, and the book, by the way, is extremely thick. You'd be surprised how many sundown towns are in your state. So this is a conversation between the author, James Lorne, and a white female clerk at a convenience store in Anna, that's spelled A-N-N-A, remember that, Illinois, in 2001. This is in 2001. So Lorne says, "Is it true that Anna stands for Ain't No Niggers Allowed?" And so the clerk says, "Yes, that's sad, isn't it?" She was sort of like distancing herself from the policy. That all happened a long time ago. It's a long time ago. And so Lauren said, "I understand racial exclusion is still going on here. Is that true?" And the clerk said, "Yes, that's sad. So really nothing has changed. We just have internet and the words for it quicker and to more people. When you travel by car, listeners, make sure your commute does not land you in a sundown town after dark, unawares. And let someone back home know your route if you're traveling somewhere by car. Let them know your route. You may not know you're passing through a sundown town. They may look like a regular town. It's more than they don't want you there. They will not have you there, a lot of them, period." And most, this is information is from a book called Sundown Towns. And the author, again, is James Lord, L-O-E-W-E-N. He's a historian, author, and sociologist. And he also wrote a book, which I have, called Lies My Teacher Told Me, another thick book full of information, lies that our teacher told us as we were in school. And the last one, the truth about Columbus. I don't have Emma, but I'm sure that would be interesting as well. You remember the city in Memphis that was called Whitehaven?
Yes.
And really, I'm sure that was at one time, because all the streets were named White something, Whitesboro, White Glen, White Wood, you know. Mm-hmm. And now it is called Little Africa, because...
Yes, all the black people moved in.
And
black
they left.
People moved in and took over.
So that was sort of like the middle class
area for black people.
And it was so far out. I remember when we were looking for a home, we found the home, and we were going there for the first time, you know, to look at it and everything, and I kept saying, boy, this is a long way.
In Memphis. And it only takes you 10 or 15 minutes to get from one end to the other. Oh, goodness gracious. Yes, I remember Whitehaven, and then I remember when we co-opted it and called it Black Haven. We started calling it Black Haven. Now it's Little Africa. Because there are quite
Little
a few
Africa.
Africans from different parts of the continent that moved into that area.
Right, exactly. She did.
Dominated now by black people. You still have a few whites that have been living there for 40 or 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Whitehaven is a nice area, though. Very nice area. I'm going to go ahead on and start in thanking you so much for that research on that Featherlight too. I wanted to mention also, if you don't have the book and you just want to start reading a little bit about hearing a lecture on Sundown Towns, he has a book discussion. The author Lowens has a book discussion on YouTube, so on the book Sundown Towns, you can check that out. When you talk about when you talk about the spectacles, the lynching spectacles, I remember reading at one lynching spectacle, there were about 10,000 people that came into town, because when there was a lynching that was going to take place, this was placed in the paper, people were notified, and people would come from all around. It was a carnival. It was picnic, thus pick a nigger, thus picnic. And so thousands of people would come, and I remember reading. I can't remember if this was one of Ida B. Wells' records or was it just. I think I did read this in what was that book called? The Red Record, Ida B. Wells, The Red Record. The people were so excited about coming to see this lynching. The trains were so packed that people were hanging out of the trains. They couldn't even sit. The train was to capacity. They couldn't even sit. So people were hanging out of the windows of the train.
How many see somebody kill?
Brutally
killed. This is
killed.
A deranged mind. DNA flows through. The DNA flows through.
Oh my goodness. Let me see, what kind of, we have a few more minutes before our break. I'll start in on our slave codes, black codes, and Jim Crow.
Oh,
I know we're hitting it kind of heavy tonight, but I think that this
so
is
much
quite
has been happening.
Of the time, of the attacks that we've been experiencing. We do like to talk about healing and our chakras and speaking our truth and all that. But this, too, I believe, is something, this discussion will help us raise our frequencies and vibrations, because we have to understand that none of this is new. I hear so many people say, why are they doing this? What's happening there? Oh, they've gone crazy. No, it's nobody's gone crazy.
No.
This stuff has always happened. We've always been under attack like this.
Always,
So I'll go ahead on and start talking a little bit about... Oh, I tell you what. Do you want to give your recipe before we go to break?
Oh, okay.
How about you do that? How about you do the recipe? And then we'll just come back.
Yes. Okay, so recipe for a beet smoothie. It's actually beet and mango smoothie.
I love beet.
I have gotten back on my smoothie kick. I had gotten off it a little bit after I moved. Sometimes you make a move and you skip things you're supposed to be doing, changes. All right, so I cut 4 to 5 slices of fresh beets. Beets are so healthy. 1 small mango, juice of lime or small lemon, handful of cilantro, 2 to 3 slices of cucumber, 1 tablespoon of chia seeds, which is optional. I just put chia seeds in everything. 2 to 3 scoops of yogurt or half a banana. That gives it its thickness for like a smoothie. When you leave the yogurt or the banana out, then it's more, it's more liquid. Okay. 1/4 cup coconut milk. I prefer coconut milk. I don't do the 2% or anything. Coconut milk. 3, if you don't have any coconut milk, skip that. That's fine. Just use a little water. It'll still be delicious. 3 or 4 ice cubes actually can be substituted for milk. Make it nice and cold. So there are 2 parts to the beet. You got your greens, and then you have the beet, the root. So the leafy green is just as good. The beet is good. The leafy green fights inflammation. It has more iron than spinach. The root part, it contains a good deal of sugar now, so don't go crazy, you know, with it every day, because it contains more sugar than any other vegetable. In fact, in the 19th century, Napoleon, it's crazy, so declared beetroot to be used as a primary source of sugar after the British restricted access to sugar cane. So use beetroot in moderation. Africans used it for dyeing because it, you know, dyeing their clothing because it has a beautiful, strong color. So the beetroot is good for your brain, so it helps fight Alzheimer's. It's good for bone health, lowers your blood pressure, gives you a boost of stamina, energy. So you can take the beetroot and grate it over salads, eat it raw. You can add it to your fresh vegetable juice, your smoothies, or you can lightly steam it. Okay, you can marinate it with lemon juice, herbs, and olive oil, or you can saute it lightly, just like spinach and Swiss chard, the leafy kind.
I like Swiss chard.
I do too. I just discovered Swiss chard. Yeah.
Oh.
Very delicious.
Beet and mango smoothie.
Oh, one other thing. If you have, let me just say this right quick, about a minute. You may want to have a salad to take for lunch, but you don't feel like fixing it. Sometimes I don't fix a salad just because I put everything in it and it takes a good minute. So here's what you can do. Take a mason jar or some other jar, like your coffee jar, you clean it and what have you, something that has a top on it. You make your salad at night. You can have overnight salad, and this is what you do. It will be fresh. You put your salad dressing at the bottom.
Okay, at the bottom.
You put it at the bottom. Yeah. You put anything that's heavy, like nuts or beans. You put them at the bottom. Then you put your greens. Okay. Then you put your herbs, things, your light stuff that may crush. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then did I forget anything? Of course, you would put your onion at the bottom if you have, you know, your bell pepper, things like that. So you keep this layer like this, and then you put in your refrigerator. You can do 5. You can do, you know, different ones, add different things, different nuts. And you can do 5 for the whole week, and then in the morning you wake up, you take it with you, and when you're ready to eat it, then you shake it up.
Shake it up, baby.
So that, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So, salad in a jar.
Salad in a jar. I still have to get with that one. I have to. Maybe I'll try it. I'm still kind of like.
Yeah.
I'm hoping my leaves, my spinach leaves are not soggy or anything. But like you said, if
you
just place it in there.
Try it one time. Yeah.
Right.
I'm gonna try it, and I'll tell you about it next week. I just found out about this, but I'm gonna try it, and I'm gonna let you know.
Sounds good. All right. Well, let's take a break, and we will be right back. You're tuned in to the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show here on Black Talk Radio Network.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Right, and we are back here at the Mind, Body, and Spirit Radio Show. Since we have so much to discuss tonight, I'm going to move right on into our second topic for tonight, slave codes, black codes, and Jim Crow laws. But before we go into that, there is this hashtag, I'm African Born In, and this is in relation to Reparations Day. And so this group is asking that people use the hashtag I'm African Born In. That's I am, no apostrophe. I am African Born In. And this is designed to help spark a global public conversation to bring us as people of the African diaspora closer together and closer to Africa. Why are they doing this? Because reconnecting with each other, with Africa, and with our cultural heritage are crucial steps along the road to destroying any, destroying the anti-black narrative that has burdened and limited us for centuries. So I'm here for that. I'm all here for that. I did hashtag that, and if you go onto the website, I'm African Born In, there's a toolkit where you can change your avatar to the icon that they have, the avatar that they have for the hashtag. So check it out, I'm African Born In. So you can participate online, and you see, I think they have a conference, too, that they're having. And I'll share that date. But that's for the rest of this week. This hashtag started, I think, the 21st. And you can hashtag and share your stories via video on Instagram or tweet. Or you can send your videos in to them also. But they're asking for people just to participate. Change your logo to the I'm African Born if you're interested. All right, so slave codes, Featherlight. Slave codes, slave codes. I want to start off with some slave code examples. Virginia, 1705, if any slave resisted his master, correcting such a slave, and shall happen to be killed in such correction, the master shall be free of all punishment, as if such accident never happened. Sounds very familiar. Okay. If you go back and look at, let's look at any case, Anton Sterling, Philando Castile, Sam DeBose, Trayvon Martin. We can go on and on. What's the young girl, Shakisha, the pregnant woman. We can go on and on and on. Rakia Boyd, Sandra Bland. Nothing happens to these people when someone is killed. South Carolina, 1712. Be it enacted by the authority aforesaid that no master, mistress, overseer, or other person whatsoever that hath the care and charge of any Negro or slave shall give their Negroes or any other slaves leave to go out of their plantations. Every slave hereafter out of his master's plantation without a ticket or leave in writing from his master shall be whipped. To me, that sounds like us always having to present ID. That reminds me of the stop and frisk that was going on in New York. People being stopped and frisked, going to the store, going to school, and coming right back home. There were more stop and frisk in New York. What year was that? Was it 2015? There were more stop and frisk. It may have been 2016. Than people that actually lived in that area, which proved that they were stopped going and coming from their destinations. Louisiana 17:24, the slave who, having struck his master, his mistress, or the husband of his mistress, or their children, shall have produced a bruise or shedding of blood in the face, shall suffer capital punishment. Okay, let's see. And the fine for concealing runaway slaves, some people may be familiar with this, $1,000, a prison sentence of up to 1 year. A fine of $100 and 6 months in prison would be imposed for employing any black slave or clerk. Now, let's look at black codes. Black codes were restrictive laws designed to limit the freedom of African Americans and ensure their availability as cheap labor force after slavery was abolished, so-called abolished, during the Civil War. Under black codes, many states required blacks to sign yearly labor contracts. If they refused, they risked being arrested, fined, and forced into unpaid labor. Now listen, you make me sign a contract saying that I'm going to work. What if I'm starting my own business? What if I'm working for myself? Starting my own business. Do I have to sign a yearly contract with you, or else then you'll put me back into pen into slavery, arrest me, jail me, incarcerate me? Under black codes, many states required blacks to sign these contracts. And even as former slaves fought to assert their independence and gain economic autonomy during the earliest years of Reconstruction, white landowners acted to control the labor force through a system similar to the one that existed during slavery. So all of this is just remixed, upgraded. To that end, in late 1865, Mississippi and South Carolina enacted the first black code. So that's right after the Civil War. Mississippi's law required blacks to have written evidence of employment for the coming year each January. If they left before the end of the contract, they would be forced to forfeit earlier wages and were subject to arrest. In South Carolina, a law prohibited blacks from holding any occupation other than farmer or servant unless they paid an annual tax of $10 to $100. Now, when you're talking about $10 or $100 in 1865, that's a hell of a lot of money. That's a fine that's almost incredulous to think about. So this provision hit free blacks already living in Charleston and former slave artisans especially hard. In both states, blacks were given heavy penalties for vagrancy, including forced plantation labor in some cases. Under Johnson's Reconstruction policies, nearly all the southern states would enact their own black codes in 1865 and 1866, while the codes granted certain freedoms to African Americans, including the right to buy and own property, marry, make contracts, and testify in court, only in cases involving people of their own race. Okay, that was the caveat. Their primary purpose was to restrict blacks' labor and activity. Some states limited the type of property that blacks could own, while virtually all the former Confederate states passed strict vagrancy and labor contract laws, as well as so-called anti-enticement measures designed to punish anyone, check this out, who offered higher wages to a black laborer already under contract. So even if we had some white allies who sympathized with us, who wanted to help, as we do now, then there were laws to prevent them from that. Just like we were familiar with what was that? The runaway slave law. You couldn't provide shelter for a runaway. That was against the law. You couldn't teach an enslaved person how to read. That was against the law. Blacks who broke labor contracts were subject to arrest, beating, and forced labor and apprenticeship laws. Forced many miners either orphans or those whose parents were, listen, parents were deemed unable to support them by a judge into unpaid labor for white planters. Now, to me, that sounds like what we see with the CPS system. You're removing children from their families and placing them into another home. We have Delta Cougar who comes on the show. This is what she's experienced. Her grandchildren were removed and placed into a white home, and Delta really feels that her children are not being treated properly. Passed by a political system in which blacks effectively had no voice, the black codes were enforced by all white police and state militia forces, often made up of Confederate veterans of the Civil War across the South. Black codes were essentially replacements for slave codes in those states. Before the war in the states that prohibited slavery, some black codes were also enacted by northern states such as Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and New York, prior to discourage free blacks from residing in those states and denying them equal rights. That's in line with the sundown towns that you spoke about, Featherlight, including the right to vote, the right to public education, and the right to equal treatment under the law. Since the colonial period, colonies and states had passed laws that discriminated against free blacks, and the South, these were generally included in the slave codes. The goal was to, again, reduce the influence of free blacks, particularly after slave rebellions. Free blacks would have this influence on those that were enslaved, because, of course, many of them would try to assist them in their liberation. And so there was this movement to prevent the communication amongst the free blacks, the communication and interaction amongst free blacks and those that were enslaved. Let's go to Jim Crow. Jim Crow. Facilities for African Americans were consistently inferior and underfunded compared to those which were then available to white Americans. Sometimes they did not exist at all. This body of law institutionalized a number of economic, educational, and social disadvantages. Segregation by law existed mainly in the southern states, while northern segregation was generally a matter of fact. Patterns of housing segregation enforced by private covenants, bank lending practices, and job discrimination, including discriminatory labor union practices. Jim Crow was a pejorative expression referring to a minstrel song called Jump Jim Crow. Segregation by law existed mainly in the southern states, while northern... Okay, I read that part. The mandated racial segregation in all public facilities in the states of the former Confederate States of America, starting in the 1870s and 1880s, and upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, separate but equal doctrine, right? So public education had essentially been segregated since its establishment in most of the South after the Civil War. This principle was extended to public facilities and transportation, right? So in terms of restaurants, it should be unlawful to conduct a restaurant or other place for the serving of food in the city at which white and colored people are served in the same room, unless such white and colored persons are effectually separated by a solid partition extending from the floor upward to the distance of 7 feet or higher. I mean, they actually thought this crap out. It goes on about the beer and wine. Beer and wine shall serve either white people exclusively or colored people exclusively. I wanted to share this particular piece on the Jim Crow because when we look at the incidents that have been happening, like with the women mm-hmm. in the Houston's restaurant, mm-hmm. the other group, Jay Morrison, when they tried to enter Houston's and goodness gracious, that video went viral. They didn't want to serve them, all of this business about, oh, well, we have to separate your party. And then even when the party was separated, they still didn't want to serve them. So all of this, to me, is very reminiscent of Slave Codes, Black Codes, and Jim Crowism. And when we look at the school system, we still have these segregated schools. So we're still living under Jim Crowism.
Yeah, even more
so. They're not equal. How is it that you have some children in schools like Detroit that have leaky buildings, books that were used by the teachers 10 years ago? You have mold growing out of the walls, but then you can go over to a preschool and all of the, and a preschool in an affluent neighborhood, and all of the preschoolers have iPads to work with.
It's amazing.
So I just wanted to kind of share that information on slave codes, Jim Crow laws, and black codes. Not that people are not familiar with those codes and laws, but just so that we can reflect and compare that time period to this time period, where we have people calling the police on us because we're in Starbucks, or we are barbecuing, or we're walking down the street, or you didn't wave at the neighbor across the street, so she wants to call the police and accuse you of being a robber when you're actually leasing the house through our Airbnb. Limiting
share
our labor and activity.
Right. I wanted to share a little bit of information too about that period right after the captured Africans were emancipated, so to speak. KKK originated in Pulaski, Tennessee, in 1865, right after the war. So there were, the reason why it was constructed, of course, was to destroy any gains that blacks had made under Reconstruction. And any, like you said, any white supporters were also targeted. So they systematically murdered black politicians and political leaders throughout the South. And President Johnson did nothing to prevent the killings or to arrest the killers. And they were known because he had appointed the federal officers who were hostile to Reconstruction. So these people were known, and there were judges, and there were jurors who were KKK members, doctors. Mm-hmm. They were not just regulated to the police officers. Again, you can't even really call them police officers. So this was widespread. Blacks were whipped for having arguments with whites, for having jobs that whites wanted, for reading a newspaper, for having a book in their homes, or simply being black. Isn't this what we're going through right now? And a white person could actually enter a black's home without knocking. I didn't say a police person. I'm saying a white person could enter a black person's home without even knocking. And after slavery, whites became obsessed by blacks, talking about them all day long, like, what will they do? How will they survive? Where will they work? What could they do? Would they want to take revenge? Because they knew all the horrible things that they had done. And so they complained about the way blacks exercised their freedom, just as they do now. And they were infuriated by the independence expressed by these former slaves that they'd once held in bondage. And they accused them of being disrespectful, insolent, insubordinate, and even ungrateful. One white said, "We don't believe because the nigger is free, he ought to be saucy." And those were his exact words. White men murdered blacks for any reason, for no reason at all. One murderer claimed that the victim did not remove his hat, and so he killed him. Another said he wanted to. Yes, another one said he wanted to quote unquote thin out the niggers a little. A third one said he wanted to, quote, see a dead nigger kick. Bodies were mutilated, ears severed, tongues cut out, eyes gouged out. men were beheaded and skinned, the skin nailed to a barn. So this is the kind of activity that was going on after our African ancestors were freed from bondage. It was just so much hate in seeing these people walk around free. It's like, how dare you walk amongst me free?
In your pursuit of liberty and happiness.
Right. Right. Mm. So, one senator, and please keep in mind, this is not just regulated to low people. These are high people in high places. One senator warned, keep the spelling book and the land from the possession of the Negro if you hope to control him.
Of course.
Blacks who've been given land in the South were forced at bayonet gunpoint by President Andrew Johnson, who rescinded the order and said, I said this was your land, but I changed my mind. You got to give it back or we will shoot you.
Mm. Mm, he's such a killer.
We will kill you.
Mm.
All right, so.
Are you going to share your spoken word?
Yes. Let's see. All right, let me do this quick quote right quick. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three.
I remember
three.
When George Bush tried to say that quote and he couldn't get it right for anything.
But you know, right. People, every time right. I hear that, I think of him.
Right. But people say that was all an act. He was told to like dumb it down for people to attract
right.
that particular population.
Right.
He's not as dumb as he appeared to be.
Yes, I heard that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So anyway,
it's all camouflage.
Yeah.
Game. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Fool me three, five, seven times or more. You have to wonder, am I that gullible, or am I just completely comfortable, constantly playing the victim?
All right.
This piece is called Unapologetically Black. I refuse to be a victim any longer.
Right.
I refuse to apologize. I refuse to feel ashamed for who I am, what I represent, or what I look like in someone else's eyes. I am not defenseless. I refuse to feel guilty for being outstanding in so many ways. I refuse to dumb down my intelligence just to give someone else praise. I refuse to commit to one hairstyle, one hair length, one skin tone, one career type, or one size. I am me, full of variety, flavor, and essence. I am wise. I need not your permission to be. It is my birthright, you see. I am not defenseless. I do not apologize for demanding respect and humane civility from my fellow man versus constant brutality and senseless harassment in exchange for my taxpayer dollars. Against this, yes, I will take a stand. I do not apologize. I do not see the need for taking the high road, the back seat, the balcony, or the side door for someone else's prejudice and greed. I do not apologize for my record-breaking achievements despite the many roadblocks placed on my route. Nor do I apologize for having a conscious heart, a forgiving spirit, and more than an inkling of what this time on earth is all about. I do not apologize for my flair and zest for life, for the love and honor of my culture, or for rising from the dust of your feet, I refuse to apologize for the many inventions and advances my ingenuity gave to the world, including the transplant of a heartbeat. No, I am not the enemy, but I can be. I am not the aggressor here, but it is in me. If I am to not only survive, but thrive, I must be the me I came here to be. Strikingly beautifully, by the standards of nature herself, brilliantly designed by the spirals of the universe, magnificently endowed with creative energy that flows like a river, abundantly implanted with compassion and wisdom beyond my earthly time, and instilled by the gods with powers beyond your imagination. I am a masterpiece. I am unapologetically black. Namaste.
All right, I'm unapologetically black. I know that's right.
Unapologetically black. You know, shame is the lowest vibration that there is. And at times, the world, society wants us to feel ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
And that vibration is so low that it affects you in your dealings with yourself and with others.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to get out of that feeling of shame.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because we have been made to feel ashamed. In particular, I'm speaking from, and I'm not taking anything away from black men, but just to speak from a black woman's perspective, we were made to feel ashamed of our hair, our body size, the curves. I remember it was so difficult because of the curvy shape that many black women have. We used to have trouble finding jeans that would fit because we had the hourglass figure, small waist, big hips and booty and the legs and all. And so it was difficult to find jeans that would fit around our waist but also fit around your hips. It was quite a while before many of us. I remember hearing complaints about that. I remember experiencing that, having difficulty finding jeans that would fit.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay, so we want to do some breathing. Shame. I'm glad you shared that about the shame being the lowest vibration because I wasn't aware.
Yes, it's a 20. It's a 20, and enlightenment is the 700. So just imagine how far down on the scale,
right?
Shame is.
So you're vibrating at 20 when you're feeling that shame.
Yes.
And we need to be at a
exactly.
700.
Yes. Shoot for the 700.
Yes.
All right. By the way, fear is 100, so it's not that far from away from shame. So let's we have to do a little quick one. Just stand and let's do a little shaking. First, relax your knees, relax your shoulders, raise your shoulders up to your ears and lower them. Raise them up again, lower, and kind of shake your shoulders a little bit. Sometimes we don't know that we're holding stress in our shoulders, so that's the first place we should try to release the stress by shaking, and just shake your hands, shake your wrists, shake your arms, and then start shaking in your heels. Shake your ankles, your legs, your thighs, your hips. And keep your head focused and turn to your left, as you shake, turn to your right. Shaking is one of the fastest ways to relieve stress. And the second fastest way is the smile. So smile and shake. Smile and shake. And slow it down. Okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to do a quick grounding Qigong exercise. We have been working on the root chakra, and next week we will start on the sacral chakra. So to close out the root, this is a grounding exercise. There are five elements, and there is a Qigong exercise for each one. You've got earth, wind, fire, water, and space. Space is that little place in between your nostrils and your brain. There is absolutely nothing there, no bones, no muscle. It's just space, and that's why people snort cocaine and get high really fast, because it goes straight to the brain. So that's your fifth element. So the earth element is a very good element, Qigong exercise to do, because it can be done alone, because it's a perfect balance of your yin and yang energy. Okay, so stand with feet shoulder width apart, hands just below your navel at your energy center. It's called the Dajin in the Chinese culture. It's very important. It's your reservoir, your energy reservoir. Left hand over right for women, reverse for men. Someone asked me why. So basically, I believe it's because, as you know or may not know, the brain is divided into two parts, feminine and the male, has nothing to do with sex. And the right side of the brain controls the left side of the body and is the feminine side. And ladies, you can remember that by saying, to the left, to the left, everything you want to the left. And the woman is always right. Breathe in and breathe out. Breathe in and breathe out. Okay, now flip your hands, flip your palm up so that you're looking right down at the inside of your hands. And we're going to scoop palms up. Inhale. And exhale, stoop down. Feel your arms with energy. Stretch your arms out wide as if you're scooping up some leaves. Inhale, filling your arms with energy. Exhale, arms out to the sides. Inhale, flip your arms up. Bring your arms up over your head. Form a triangle with your hands. Exhale, bring your arms, your hands down to your abdomen. Pause and feel your body, your breath. Get in touch with how you feel. Inhale, exhale, and we'll do it again. Your hands are palms up, long as fingertips touching or overlapping. You're going to inhale, filling your arms with energy. Exhale, comfortably bend your knees to spread your arms out wide to the earth. Inhale, scoop arms up. Scoop up good heavenly, healing, earthly chi. Bring your arms back to your abdomen. Exhale, take your arms out to the side. Palms down, arms straight, perfect balance. Inhale, reverse the palms, raise your arms over your head, form a triangle with your hands. Exhale, bringing down the good positive chi to fill your body with essence and spirit. Hold, breathe comfortably, and one more time. This time we're just going to scoop our arms out in a circle and bring down into Angelou Mudra, which is the prayer symbol. Nod. Smile. Namaste. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Thank you so much. Namaste. Namaste, Satellite. Namaste, Scotty. Namaste to all of our listeners.
Have a safe, prosperous week. Peace.